The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Hello, everyone. This is Brad McDonald, and I'll be taking the program today for Mr. Stephen Flurry. It's great to be back here. Good to be back with you. It's been a while. I'm pretty excited about the subject that I would like to talk about today. I think it's a really interesting trend, and it's a trend that really bears close monitoring by anyone interested in events in Europe, anyone interested in Bible prophecy. I think the trend that I'm going to talk about today, it really begins to answer a question that we've been talking about here at the Trumpet for a few years now. We'll get to that question a little bit later on in the program. But first, I'll have to give you some background, give you some facts that will hopefully make this trend more obvious. I'm going to be delivering a few French words too, so you'll have to forgive me for my horrible French. But it is what it is, I guess. I'm going to do my best. But in France last week, François Fillon was elected to the leadership of France's largest centre-right political party, and Mr. Fillon is going to represent. I think the party's name is Les Républicains. He's going to represent that party in national elections next spring. He beat Nicolas Sarkozy and one other French politician. Actually, he beat his two competitors pretty handily. He beat them by he won more than 60% of the vote, and he will now go into national elections next year in France as the most popular candidate. His main competitor in national elections will be Marine Le Pen, the far-right party in France. But François Fillon is an interesting individual. He's socially conservative. He's against abortion. He's against same-sex marriage. And if he wins the national election next year, he's actually going to try limit some of the rights that same-sex couples have in France, which is really a pretty bold move in the 21st century Western politics to try walk back some of the laws that have been passed supporting LGBT rights. Mr. Fillon is an advocate of the free market economy. He's promised to go after France's welfare state and actually make cutbacks, which is really, again, a pretty bold move. He's talked about cutting back or limiting the reach of the government in France. But what's really interesting about François Fillon is the fact that he is a pretty staunch Roman Catholic. And his social conservatism really stems from his ardent Catholic beliefs. And he's not a closet Catholic. His Catholic background wasn't something that he tried to hide in the lead up to the election a couple of weeks ago. He was very open about his Catholic faith. He repeatedly talked about how it was his Catholic faith that shaped and influenced his worldviews and his political views. And a lot of his political ambitions are rooted in his Catholic beliefs and his Catholic background and his Catholic education. He went to a Catholic school. He was raised going to church regularly. He still does now. But Mr. Fillon speaks regularly about wanting to preserve the traditional family and traditional family values. He's been public about wanting to limit the rights of homosexuals and those in a homosexual marriage, which is legal in France today. He's talked publicly and often about restoring and protecting France's Christian heritage. He's concerned about radical Islam in France and the Islamification of French culture. And he's vowed to defend France's history and to defend France's Christian culture. If he's elected next year, he wants to change school curriculums and have schools teach French history, not a multicultural history, but French national history. Now, the point I think that's interesting here is that an openly staunch Catholic was just nominated to represent the Conservative Party in French national elections. This really is, it's a pretty big deal. It would seem that this almost runs counter to the current trend that we see in the West, or at least what we've been told is a trend. But in Western countries today, it would seem, and we're told by the mainstream media and politicians, but here in the West, it really seems like politics are what you could call post-religious. Religion really doesn't play nearly the same role in politics and in government that it once did. Religion isn't the force that it once was in shaping policies and shaping the talking points of political parties. Politics in the West are more secular than they ever have been. And, I mean, we see fruits of this secularization of Western politics all over the place, particularly on the social issues, obviously. More rights being granted to LGBT people, the liberalization of abortion laws, and just... We see the secular view evident in so many policies and decisions in politics today. And I think you could even back out further and just say, even in Western culture and society, you could say Western culture and society in the 21st century is increasingly post-religious. Church attendance, whether it's Britain or across Europe, I haven't checked the statistics for America, but church attendance has dropped massively in recent decades. Religion is passé, especially for young people. Western culture is far more secular. Those traditional morals and traditional family values, they've really been destroyed throughout the West. And, you know, when you look at this, you can easily get the impression that wherever you look in the West, the influence of Christianity has diminished. It's halfway to the grave, as they say. And I really think, particularly in America and Britain, this is the case. But I also think that the election of François Fillon and the people responsible for electing this individual might indicate that religion, and more specifically the Catholic religion, is not per se. It is not as irrelevant as many tend to think it is. Does Fillon's nomination show that there's still an appetite for Catholic beliefs and Catholic leadership in France? I think it does, and I'll read you some statistics and some facts here in a minute that show that there is still an appetite for Catholic beliefs and Catholic doctrine and Catholic leadership in France. And then one of the questions I want to hopefully get us thinking about is, well, if there's an appetite in France for Catholic belief, Catholic doctrine, Catholic leadership, then surely that same appetite must exist all across Europe. But 67% of conservative voters nominated François Fillon. I mean, it was a landslide victory. And he's a very traditional conservative, very Catholic politician. And he's just so, so popular. And as I mentioned, this man is now the favorite to win elections, the national election in France. I think it's next spring. Do you know, Sam? Sam usually knows all of these things, but he's having an off day today. I think it's April or May. But how was this possible? How did this happen? Well, there's a couple of news stories that showed how a lot of French people, especially rural or people in rural France, voted for the Catholic Fillon. They valued his Catholic beliefs, and that this indicates that there's actually a latent Catholicism still alive in France today. Now, again, that may not be evident in church attendance. I read a statistic. I may even have it in my notes. I think only 5 out of 100 people in France, 100 Catholics, actually attend services. But that fact doesn't mean there isn't a latent Catholicism. There really appears to be a significant number of French who identify with their Catholic roots. They like the tradition of the church, and they like the idea of the church and church doctrine influencing national politics and national policies. And that's why they voted for François Fillon. I'll just read a quote from a foreign policy article. This was from December 1st, so last week, talking about the election or the nomination of Mr. Fillon. The article says, having decisively defeated several rivals in his party's primary this past weekend, François Fillon will carry the standard for Le Républicain in France's presidential election next spring. Competitors and commentators, indeed, many voters, and it was mostly the voters in Paris, it was mostly the voters in the big cities, were surprised by this outcome. Surprised because Fillon has long trailed in the polls. Surprised because Fillon, the former prime minister, was long dismissed as the eternal number two. Surprised because Fillon has promised to starve the beast that is the welfare state in France. But surprised, too, because as the rest of the country is now discovering, Fillon is Catholic. Very Catholic. So Catholic, at least to the secular left, that a headline in the newspaper Libération screamed, "Help! Jesus has returned." So that's how this newspaper, I think it's a Paris-based newspaper, that was their big heading splashed across their front page after the nomination of Fillon. "Help! Jesus has returned. The Catholics have risen up and come out in force and voted this man in." The article has a couple of paragraphs where it talks about how Fillon comes from Vendée, which is a staunchly Catholic region of France. It talks about the fact that he never shied away from his Catholic roots and his Catholic background in the run-up to the election. In fact, he campaigned on it. He promoted his Catholic heritage. And there was a significant segment of the French population that appreciated that and voted for him as a result of that. In his biography, Fillon emphasizes his Catholic schooling and he talks about how it shaped his worldview and it shapes his politics today. The foreign policy article, this is what it wrote. "And as it turns out, legions of French men and women who have not And, as it turns out, legions of French men and women who have not kept their faith will nonetheless turn out in droves for a politician who has kept his faith." Now, that's interesting, isn't it? There's a significant number of French, it would seem, who aren't, you know, they're not overtly Catholic. Their endorsement of the Catholic faith is not witnessed in the fact that they're taking mass every Wednesday night or going to church services every Sunday. But when it comes to who represents them, they want someone who is Catholic, or they want someone who puts a high value on Catholic faith and Catholic tradition. It's these people who aren't overt or, let's say, practicing Catholics, but who still appreciate and want the influence of the Catholic Church and Catholic teaching in France and in government. These people, this article termed France's zombie Catholics. The title of the article, I forgot the article, sorry about that, but it was something about France's zombie Catholics are back or something like that. The article says, in a country where barely 5 citizens in 100 attend church, the weight of Catholicism is still evident. Now, I think that is just really, really interesting. France is not, you know, today it's hard to see the Catholic identity of France. As I mentioned, people aren't filling the church pews every Sunday. But people are still voting Catholic. Sam is just holding up a computer. Oh, the title of the article is France's Zombie Catholics Have Risen and They're Voting. Thanks, Sam. Way to redeem yourself. But this is really interesting, this idea that there's a latent Catholic spirit still flowing through France. Honestly, I didn't really know what a zombie was until this morning. But apparently a zombie is a person that's dead but not dead, or a person that's dead but is undead. I think based on that, it sounds like an appropriate analogy. So a lot of people in France, it would seem, see value in Catholicism. A lot of people in France, it would seem, have an appetite for Catholic doctrine and for Catholic leadership. These zombie Catholics, as they're being called, they might not be eager participants in the Catholic faith, but they're still wanting the Catholic Church or Catholic dogma and Catholic tradition and Catholic faith to play a role in their culture and in their government. I've got a couple of other examples where we've seen this in France. Back in 2013, France's Parliament, I think it was January 2013, France's Parliament passed a law allowing homosexuals to marry and granting them certain benefits after they're married. I think one of which was the freedom to adopt a child. And, I mean, it really seemed like France at the time was really just joining the cohort of other nations in the Western world that were making homosexual marriage legal. But in France, this new law was met with a lot of opposition. The nation at the time really experienced some huge protests. There was a massive backlash. Now, in the end, the law passed, but only by a very narrow... it was still pretty unpopular. I think it was 51 or 52% of the public in a referendum approved of the law. John Litchfield, he writes for the Independent, and he's stationed in Paris. And this is what he wrote at the time. The protests have reawoken old demons. Church versus Republic. Real France versus anti-France, which weakened the country in the 1890s and the 1930s. And then John Litchfield, he explained how the protests have brought out a new breed of political activists, traditional Catholics. Just one last quote here from Litchfield. The crossover between hard right activists and Catholo-traditionalist kids fits a pattern which has worried politicians of both right and left in recent weeks. The mass gay marriage protests have eroded the increasingly flimsy barriers between the traditional and the hard right in France, between the National Front and the centre right. Now, the point Litchfield makes, and that was very evident, was the Catholic faith was at the heart of these demonstrations. The Catholic Church was supporting. There was Catholic priests and clergy leading these demonstrations. Before that, in 2012, leading up to that vote in Parliament, there were massive protests that summer about the fact that this law was even being put forward to be passed. Some of the protests had as many as 100,000 people. And again, people were voting. It was a result of the assault, they thought, on Catholic faith and Catholic belief and Catholic doctrine. of course, the law has been passed. Homosexual marriage in France is now legal. But the point I'm just making here is that it wasn't without some pretty dramatic opposition. And again, in 2017, the magnitude of that opposition just showed that there is a latent appreciation or a latent appetite for Catholic belief and Catholic tradition in France. Now, there's no doubt that Europe today is progressive and Europe today is secular. And that's what we're told, isn't it? That's what we're told by the mainstream media. That's what we're told by European politicians. Egalitarian, I think, another French word they use to tout how progressive and advanced they are. Europe leads the way on the progressive issues like climate change and multiculturalism and globalization and social change. You know, Europe was the first in the Western world to have more liberal laws passed supporting drug use and abortions and LGBT rights. Europe is progressive and it's as we're told, it is secular. But just after what we witnessed in France, you know, you do have to wonder if Europe's progressiveness, if its secularization has been somewhat exaggerated by the media. To me, it looks like Europe's elite, you know, its intellectuals, the mainstream politicians, the liberal media, they're no doubt keen for progressivism and secularization. They're no doubt keen to, you know, to pass laws to save the transgendered, migrant, morally confused polar bears. They're no doubt keen to lead the charge in climate change and equal rights. Europe's liberal elites, they're progressive, they're secular, and it's their voices that we hear the most. But what if Europe's people, what if the publics of Europe aren't as progressive and aren't as secular as we've been led to believe? And I think the facts increasingly reveal that this is the case. The election of François Fillon shows that a significant number of French aren't as progressive, as secular, as tolerant, as globalist as the elites might be in Paris. And it also showed that Catholicism still has a place in France. This foreign policy article quotes a book written by two French authors documenting this trend. And I'll just read from the foreign policy article, but it quotes the book. Todd and Labraz, these are the authors of the book, Todd and Labraz marvel over the persistence of Catholic habits and values in regions where Catholicism has more or less vanished as an institution. That's fascinating. They marvel over the persistence of Catholic habits and values in regions where Catholicism has more or less vanished as an institution. The most astonishing paradox, they note, is the rise of social movements shaped by a religion that has disappeared as a metaphysical belief. Again, people may not be attending church services. They may not be, you know, devouring sermons from the local priest. But the Catholic faith, the Catholic dogma, Catholic morals, traditional Catholic culture is still influencing their views. Just back to the foreign policy article. Unable to resist the French weakness for paradox, Todd and Labraz conclude, and it quotes the authors now, Catholicism seems to have attained a kind of life after death. But since it is a question of this worldly life, we will define it as zombie Catholicism. And across France, there are regions filled with zombie Catholics. Back to the foreign policy article. The Vendée and Brittany, the western regions that backed Fillon, are among what the authors call the most anthropologically hardened zombie Catholic enclaves. places where the church has vanished, but its practices and values persist. According to Jérôme Fouquet, the director of opinion and business strategies for the French pollster IFOP, the takeaway was clear. Catholic, or at least zombie Catholic, voters played a disproportionate role in this primary. Le Monde is one of the main newspapers in France. I think it's based out of Paris, Le Monde. But it was talking about Fillon's victory, and it said that it revealed the emergence of a Catholic and patrimonial right. Now, as I said at the beginning, I think the existence of these zombie Catholics, the existence of a latent Catholicism in France, really raises some interesting questions and observations, not just about France, but about Europe in general. Are there zombie Catholics across Europe? Are there segments, significant segments of Europe's populations who would like to see their governments embrace more Catholic doctrine and those traditional values? If that's the case, then Europe probably isn't as secular as we think it is. Will these zombie Catholics in Europe be further excited, further moved to action? What will those actions look like? Also, I mean, is this a sign that we're about to see a Catholic Renaissance in Europe? And what would such a renaissance look like? We're going to go ahead and take a break, and after we come back, we'll go ahead and explore some of these questions.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Herbert W. Armstrong long forecast the arrival of a military superpower in Europe. In a world where European nations can't rely on the United States, one in which they fear Russia and face the constant threat of radical terror, their only hope of survival is to band together. This is what we see happening, and what we see happening was prophesied in your Bible. Request Germany and the Holy Roman Empire to learn about the history of Germany and the Holy Roman Empire and to understand where the events in Europe today are leading. 3,000 years ago, the prophet Daniel explained that at the time of the end, radical Islam would push against Europe. That time is now. We are witnessing the first manifestations of this Islamist push against Europe, and it's leading to a spectacular clash between these two prophesied kings, the King of the North and the King of the South. What does the Bible say about the identity of these two kings? What about the end time? Will everyone be affected by these events? Request our two booklets, The King of the South and Germany and the Holy Roman Empire. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
Welcome back. This is Brad McDonald, and today I'm talking about Europe's zombie Catholics. This is a large group of Europeans. We don't know the exact numbers, but it would appear the facts suggest that there's a significant number of Europeans who, while they're not overtly Catholic, they're not attending services each week, still highly value Catholic tradition, and they have an appetite for Catholic leaders and Catholic politicians. This trend was evident a couple of weeks ago in the election of François Fillon, a staunch and public Catholic, to represent the Conservative Party in national elections next year. French elites and liberals were surprised at how many French voted for Fillon because of his Catholicism. Again, these people weren't practicing Catholics, but they want Catholic values, they want Catholic tradition. They want someone who's going to lead and put a high value on Catholic values and tradition. Before we get into answering some of these questions I raised right before the break, I just want to read one last quote from this foreign policy article. It's also an open question whether French Catholics, zombie and non-zombie alike, will maintain their own resistance to the National Front's anti-Europe, anti-Muslim and anti-liberal siren call. Fillon does seem to have harnessed what the religion specialist Henry Tink calls identity Catholicism. And then this is the part of the quote I really want to focus on. Those Frenchmen and women, he said, uneasy with a modernity that has largely erased Christian values from issues like education, family, work, and sexuality, and increasingly ill at ease with transnational institutions like the EU and the transnational flow of peoples, especially when they are Muslim and hail from the Middle East, have increasingly been retreating to the ostensible safety of traditional national institutions like the Catholic Church. I mean, it's a bit wordy, but what this French religious expert is saying is we're seeing a trend in France where French men and women concerned about the secularization of French or Christian values, concerned about the EU, the tyranny of the EU, concerned about the migrant crisis, concerned about the Islamification of French culture and institutions. Those people are retreating, he says, to institutions like the Catholic Church. Nationalist institutions. And in Europe, you won't find a more nationalist institution than the Catholic Church. Now, doesn't this make a lot of sense? That Europeans concerned about, let's say, the progressivism of their leaders and the secularization of their nation and of their content. Doesn't it make sense that they would seek the traditional, that they would seek the conservative, that they would seek Catholic values again? There's a lot of Europeans who are concerned about the assault on traditional values and practices. They're concerned about immigration and the migrant crisis. They're concerned about the presence of Islam and radical Islam inside the borders of Europe. They're concerned about the tyranny of EU institutions. The number of Europeans concerned about these things is growing. And the facts prove that. Polls show that this is true. Elections across Europe on a regional and a federal level show that people are concerned. They're voting more and more for extremist political parties. The rise in street protests, whether it's against the migrants or against governments, shows that more and more Europeans are concerned about these issues. Yesterday, I read a couple of articles reporting on the I think it was the presidential election in Austria, and a lot of people were celebrating the fact that Nordhofer, the leader of the far-right party, was defeated in the runoff election on Sunday. He was defeated, and a lot of people were saying, well, this is terrific. But, I mean, it just kind of makes you smile a little bit to think that this is what counts as success in 2016. No one made the point that 46% of Austrians still voted for the far-right political party in that election. 46% of people voted for this far-right political leader. I mean, there was a time when the far-right would be getting 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8% of the votes. If their popularity ever went into the double digits, that was dramatic news. But now in Europe, you know, we have a far-right party that won 46% of the vote. And that's considered positive, because it wasn't quite enough for the far-right party to lead Austria. But the point I'm making is that more and more Germans and French and Austrians and Italians and Polish are growing concerned about the issues facing Europe. And as they grow more concerned, it's only logical that they're going to look to, quoting this French historian, look to the safety of the traditionally national institutions like the Catholic Church. We're going to see this more and more. People looking to the safety of Catholic doctrine, Catholic tradition, the conservatism of the Roman Catholic Church and Roman Catholic leaders. George Friedman is the CEO of Geopolitical Futures. Last week he wrote a terrific article highlighting the return of nationalism. I'll just read a quote from that article. Friedman says, "The world is experiencing a shift from the old liberal versus conservative model to an internationalist versus nationalist model. Nationalist challenges against the internationalist model have moved from the margins of the political system to the center, winning victories in the US and the UK and rising in strength in other countries. The rise of nationalism is the decisive character of the day," he says. Across the world, we're seeing populations increasingly want their country, their people, to come first. We saw that in America's presidential election. Donald Trump's mantra was "Make America Great Again," as opposed to Barack Obama's worldview, which is America is just, you know, one nation in a brotherhood or a company of nations around the world. In Britain, we had the British vote to leave Britain and to put Britain ahead of European interests. This trend is happening all across Europe. The nomination of Fillon on last week showed or revealed that sentiment in France. Italy's referendum on Sunday was a rejection of pro-EU initiatives and a sign that the Italians want Italy put first. We're seeing it in the rise of anti-EU, anti-globalist parties in the Netherlands, in Germany, in Spain, in Greece. Wherever you look, there's a return to nationalism. Populations are increasingly thinking about the need to protect the self, to protect their economy, to protect their borders. Now, in Europe, a return to nationalist thinking means a return to its Catholic roots. In southern Germany, in France, in Italy, in Spain, all across the continent. Europe's historic roots are Catholic roots. The Catholic Church is a core institution in the history of all of these nations. And a return to nationalism means a return to Catholicism. The Catholic Church is increasingly being viewed as a bulwark against progressivism, against secularization. It does make you wonder, are we in the beginning stages of a Catholic Renaissance across Europe? Are we in the beginning stages of a Catholic Renaissance across Europe? Now, again, I think what we can learn from France is this: a Catholic Renaissance won't necessarily look like millions and millions of Germans or Austrians starting to go to Mass on a Wednesday night and go to services on Sunday and begin to keep Lent. That's not what we're talking about. That may not happen. But we could see more. Will we see more and more Europeans do what the French just did, where they elect a leader and where they elect a political party that is influenced by traditional Catholic beliefs and traditions? If I'm a European leader seeking office right now, it really looks like being Catholic is a bit of a selling point. Fillon didn't hide from his Catholic background. He didn't shy away. He came out and told everyone, "I'm Catholic. I'm very Catholic. And that means I stand for traditional family values. That means I stand for making sure French children are educated in French history, not world history. Making sure that we stop the Islamification of France." all of these policies, all these policy points, were really, you know, largely a function of that traditional Catholic background. And I mean, you could see a message like that resonating in Germany, resonating in Poland. It is resonating in these countries. I think one upside too of emphasizing or publicizing your Catholic heritage, if you're a European politician, is that it might help you avoid the stigma of being labeled a populist or a radical, because the Catholic Church is really a respected and admired institution. It's an enduring institution that's been around for 2,000 years and shaped Europe's history. Here at the Trumpet, as you can imagine if you follow us, here at the Trumpet, this trend is just really, really significant. For many decades now, 70 years, more than 70 years, the Trumpet has been forecasting that Europe would unite. We've been forecasting that Germany would lead a united Europe. This forecast is based on Bible prophecy, and it's based too on history, the history of Europe. We have literature and articles, tens of them, hundreds of them maybe, explaining and exploring prophecies in Revelation 13 and Revelation 17 and Daniel 7 and 8 and Isaiah, showing that in the end time, a German-led European empire would rise to be the world's most powerful entity, and that this German-led European empire would be influenced by the Roman Catholic Church. The Vatican would be the glue that bonds, that unites these European countries together. I'll just read a couple of quotes showing or that show our legacy with this forecast. In August 1978, this is what Mr. Armstrong wrote. Europeans want their own united military power. They have made real effort toward union in the common market, but they well know there is one possibility of union in Europe, and that is through the Vatican. In 1980, Mr. Armstrong warned that world conditions may force European nations to unite. Bringing to pass the revived Holy Roman Empire, European nations have wanted to unite politically with a common currency and common military force for some time, but have been unable. It can only be accomplished through the Vatican. I mean, these articles, they were written 30 years ago, 35 years ago, and it's amazing how prescient they are today when we look at Europe. Here's another one from 1979, and Mr. Armstrong described a scenario that, again, is remarkable in light of what's happening in Europe today. He wrote, "The nations of Europe have been striving to become reunited. They desire a common currency, a single combined military force, a single united government. They have made a start in the common market. They are now working toward a common currency. Yet, on a purely political basis, they have been totally unable to unite." How are they going to unite? Well, Mr. Armstrong writes, "In only one way can this resurrected Holy Roman Empire be brought to fruition, by the good offices of the Vatican, uniting church and state once again, with the Vatican astride and ruling." So again, we've been expecting a Catholic Renaissance in Europe. For a long time, we've been expecting a Catholic Renaissance in Europe. Now, as we trumpet writers and the trumpet staff, we watch world events, obviously. We know what's going on, and we've had some interesting trumpet meetings where we would look at what was happening in the news. We would observe the trends. You know, we've recognized that Catholic Church attendance in Europe is down all across the continent. We're aware that Europe is more secular than it ever has been. We're aware that Europe's secularization and progressivism kind of, in many ways, puts it at odds with the Vatican. Europe is on many issues promoting values that actually conflict with what the Vatican teaches. And we've had some really interesting discussions about, well, we know a Catholic Renaissance is going to happen. We know the history alone tells us, and Bible prophecy tells us, that the Catholic Church is going to re-emerge as a force of influence in Europe. But how can we reconcile these two points? How can we reconcile the fact that Europe looks to be, you know, moving more secular and materialistic and away from what the Catholic Church teaches? I think in the program today, at least to a certain extent, we've answered that question. I mean, this election in France, to me, it just really helped me see that there is a path toward this prophecy being fulfilled. At the ground level, we're seeing that perhaps Europe isn't as progressive or secular as we've been led to believe. The publics of Europe, the peoples of Europe, they are concerned. They are concerned. And the people of Europe are looking for a savior. They're looking for someone who will stand up for Europe's Christian heritage. They're looking for someone to... They're looking for politicians who will stand up and confront radical Islam. Now, you know, it looks like a lot of Europe's elite, the elites of Europe, are going to... They're going to run into... they're already running into a very dissatisfied European public. But are we about to see more leaders like François Fillon, who tap into this latent Catholicism and who become that Catholic savior? In some ways, that's what you could call Fillon, France's Catholic savior. Now, I mean, he needs to be elected. That hasn't even happened yet. But that election does show that there's a latent Catholic spirit in France. Another thing to consider, just as we reconcile the apparent difference between where the Catholic Church is and where, quote, secular Europe is keep in mind, too, that the Catholic Church, the Vatican itself, has always been pretty... it's always been fairly flexible on doctrine and practices and things like that. On many occasions throughout its history, the decisions of the Vatican and the Catholic Church really depended more on not what was right and what was wrong and what the Bible said was right or wrong, but what was the most politically expedient decision. You can easily see a situation here where Europe and the Catholic Church really find a happy relationship. Just one last quote from Mr. Armstrong. This is from the Good News, August 1978. Mr. Armstrong writes, "Of course, the liberals will object to this enforcement of the Catholic faith." Think about this in the context of 21st century Europe. "Of course, the liberals will object to this enforcement of the Catholic faith, if it is to enforce the traditional conservative doctrines. The conservative cardinals may give some ground." You see, they may compromise. "This meeting of the College of Catholic Cardinals may emerge with a slightly changed Catholic doctrine. But the traditional conservatism will probably carry the balance of power in what emerges from this Cardinal Congress." So again, he's just recognizing the historic tendency of the Vatican. And if the Vatican will be thrilled to see someone like François Fillon lead France. And if we see leaders like Fillon pop up in Europe and elsewhere in Europe, the Vatican will be thrilled. And if they have to make some small compromises with doctrine or policies, they'll do that. This really is a significant trend. And I really think that what happened in France indicates that there is a clear and obvious way for the Vatican and the Catholic Church to reassume a greater presence and leadership role in Europe. We really might be witnessing the early stages of a Catholic Renaissance. There are, as these French historians wrote in that book, I think the book was released last year or the year before, there really is evidence showing that there's a significant number of Catholic zombies in Europe, at least in France, but probably in Europe too. So continue to watch this trend. Continue to stay tuned to thetrumpet.com, where we've been keeping you informed about this for 70 years, and we're going to keep you informed all the way till we see the ultimate fulfillment of these prophecies. This is Brad McDonald. It was great being here, and I'll talk to you soon.